Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how can you and your community become a part of the new Museum of the Jewish People? Beit HaTfutzot was originally known as the Museum of the Jewish Diaspora when it opened in 1978. The name was later changed to Museum of the Jewish People, and in the last 10 years it's undergone a complete renovation, both physically and conceptually. The new museum just opened to the public a couple of months ago with a new name, Anu, which means us in Hebrew. This week we're speaking with Asaf Gamzu, the Director of Museum Education, about the new museum.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Asaf. I did several programs at Beit HaTfutzot on visits to Israel in 2010 and 2013, and so I'd like to do this one sort of as an update since the museum has undergone such a complete renovation. First, could you just tell our listeners briefly a little bit about the original museum, when it was created and why, and what the original idea was, and maybe a little bit about how it evolved, but just briefly.
Of course. All right. So the original idea for the museum, it was an idea by the World Jewish Congress in 1959. Then leader Dr. Nachum Goldman wanted to have a museum in Israel that will talk about the life of communities around the world, of Jewish communities around the world, before the Holocaust. And the idea took a lot of time to mature. And at the end, in 1978, so that's almost 20 years later, the museum was open. The building is still called the Dr. Nachum Goldman Building, in memory of the person who had the idea. It was set up in the Tel Aviv University campus, which was then a very new campus, or at least relatively new in the 1970s. And by the time it came to be, it was originally envisioned as Yad LaGola, the sort of remembrance of communities at the Gola, but it opened as Beit HaTfutzot, as home of the diaspora. So you already see some paradigm shift there, more welcoming to Jewish communities living around the world. It was founded on this idea written by Abba Kovner. Abba Kovner was a publicist, educator, a socialist in Israel, a prominent poet as well. And he had this idea for the museum of how to describe Jewish existence. And there were seven gates of family, community, creation, memory. And a tour in that museum was a very dramatic tour. Abba Kovner was himself, as I said, a poet and a publicist. The first CEO of the museum came from the theater, Professor Weinberg. I'm sorry. So he had a great idea for the dramatic. So you would go and you would see things that in the 1970s were definitely not part of any museum. You would see movies and videos and moving images and sculptures and things. And in that way, it was a very, very, very innovative museum and an amazing one. And it was extremely successful in the 1980s in Israel. It became this rite of passage to visit the museum around the age of 12 or 13 as part of the Bat or Bar mitzvah. But as the years passed, unfortunately, the museum didn't change or update. So, you know, what was innovative and amazing in 1978 was nice in 1988, but by the 1990s lost its relevance and its edge in the museum world and also in the narrative it told of the Jewish people. And so in the early 2000s, the museum underwent a crisis, but from which it rose like a phoenix. It underwent a crisis and it was almost shut down. But the prime minister of the time, Ariel Sharon, came to the museum and had a state visit, and he decided that this museum will not be closed. And so a law was passed ensuring that the museum will have state subsidies and a budget, but also demanding, on the other hand, that it will undergo complete renewal. So that law was passed in 2005. We're now in 2021, and I'm happy to say that renewal is now complete. And we're now called ANU, Museum of the Jewish People. It's an entirely new display and exhibition with close to 500 original artifacts, which weren't the original classic museum, dozens of movies, dozens of interactive displays. And it's no longer just about the diaspora. It's about all of the Jewish people in Spain, in Israel, around the world, and throughout the ages, from antiquity to today.
What does the name mean, ANU?
So ANU, it means us, it means we, and it's part of our wish to rebrand the museum and show that we are a new museum. And so we've also decided on a new name.
What is the difference in philosophy between a diaspora museum and the new one?
So the new museum, its main, I would say, three principles is pluralism, inclusiveness, and what our chief curator, Dr. Ori Chacham-Gover, calls from Oyvei to Alleluia. So first of all, we look at the Jewish people as a plurality of origins, beliefs, faiths, practices that are all legitimate and are all a part of the Jewish people. That means there is no hierarchy, also whether Jews live in Israel or not. So it's not about either the diaspora or Israel, but it's about all of the Jewish people. Inclusiveness, that means we try and represent all of those different peoples. So when you come to the museum, hopefully you'll actually see a person that is like you or that is like the way you envision your Jewish identity. But also next to him, her, or them, you'll see another person that isn't quite what you think is Jewish, but is what they think is Jewish. And that's perfectly fine. And last, but definitely not least, is the idea of showing Jewish history in a positive way. Now, I'm sure I won't be saying anything new when I tell you that many times Jewish history is told in kind of this fashion. So let's say, so we had a temple and it burned down, and then there were pogroms, and then there was an Inquisition, and then there was a Holocaust, and I believe we died here, there, and there. And so sometimes we make this joke, but they couldn't kill us, so we eat, ha, ha, ha. But nevertheless, we see Jewish history as this sort of progression of horrors. And the museum, while of course we acknowledge the fact that there were many crises and horrible things done throughout history, we also want to celebrate the success, the cultural achievements and scientific achievements and affluence and every other thing the Jewish communities did in between those crises and disasters. And that this museum is all about that success and the life and achievements of the Jewish people.
Before we get into the details about the museum, tell us what organizations helped support the project. Tell us about the Nevslins.
So numerous people helped and donated. The Nevslin came, I believe it was right around the time when the law was passed. They came in as a major contributor with their foundation, Keren Nadav, the Nadav Foundation, and put in a lot of work and love into this museum and into shaping it as the pluralistic institution that it is. And, you know, Irena is our chairman, and we see her here, and that's their place in the museum, leading the way and supporting our work.
And other organizations?
Like I said, there are numerous organizations. For example, the Koret organization, which is based in San Francisco, is also a part. The Jewish Agency and many other organizations. And of course, as I said, the Nadav Foundation, I think, is the most prominent contributor, but definitely not the only one. Colette is an organization dedicated to Jewish education and Jewish peoplehood based in the West Coast of the U.S., where it also does a lot of educational work towards Jewish peoplehood.
Was anything of the original museum kept? Was it carried over to the new one?
Yes, I'm so happy you asked that. So, of course, like any good Jewish revolution and renewal, we do try and keep and respect the tradition and keep what we already have and what is wonderful. So I'm going to point out one, our Hallelujah Gallery, where we have the synagogues. If any of our listeners were at the museum, and of course, I hope they all were at the museum and remember it, and, you know, cry tears of joy when they hear our interview. So I imagine they probably remember, because that's what most people remember. They remember either our genealogical department and or the synagogues. So as part of the renewal of the museum, we took the synagogues and we gave them a new home with interactive displays and original artifacts. And of course, we took the synagogue models themselves and we made some restoration work on them. And they have this beautiful, beautiful new home in the Hallelujah Gallery, which was the first phase of the new museum. It opened already in 2016, I believe. And in the last phase of the renewal, which we're talking about, just opened 2 months ago, we have dioramas from the classic museums. The dioramas were also across the museum and they showed specific historical events. So we took those dioramas, we restored them, repainted them, gave them new electricity, new life, and they are installed throughout our second floor. The second floor is the journey floor that talks about the history of the Jewish people from the Second Temple to our present day. So we have the dioramas all across that floor.
I'd like you to speak a little bit about what's on each of the three floors.
I'd be happy to. So when you come to the museum, you should start on the third floor. The third floor is the floor of culture, Jewish culture and identity in our time. So the belief of the curators was that we should start with ourselves and with the present day. And from there, go and do this sort of archaeological dig into our own identity. So we start with the present day. We start with Jewish civilization, belief, culture. In the last 100 or 120 years, we have individuals talking about what does it mean to be Jewish for them. They are from Israel, from Europe, from the US, from South America. They are Olim, they are immigrants, they are Orthodox, Reform, and everything in between. After that, the floor opens up to an open space that with exhibits about theater, dance, cinema, language, modern art, folklore, amulets, beliefs, and faiths. We have a lovely movie about Tikkun Olam. We have a display center about trailblazing women. And the third floor ends with Jews in world culture, luminaries in other areas and fields that weren't, let's say, you know, in cinema or in modern art, but of course contributed to the modern world. People like Freud, Estee Lauder, Al Hirschfield, and, you know, hundreds and thousands more that we have in our interactive display there. When you go down to the second floor, as I said, it's the historical floor. There we have archaeological artifacts, manuscripts, movies, interactive displays that go from the Second Temple era to our present day, where the narrative of this chronological exhibition is not one single narrative, but rather at every time pointing at least two centers of Jewish culture and thought. Because throughout Jewish history, definitely from the Second Temple era, there is never just one place that is the Jewish cultural or faith center. You always have two, if not three. So for example, we have a station that's called Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, which is about the Middle Ages, where we have Sfarad as an extremely prominent Jewish center for Jewish philosophy, religion, and art, and the Ashkenaz as another center parallel to it. And that is how The entire floor is built all the way to modern times and today.
What is the community's wall?
The community's wall is an interactive display at the end of the second floor where we talk about present day. So we have one video installation about Israel, and across from it, we have the community's wall, which is a very, very cool project. The community's wall is entirely user-generated content. So that means you can go on a website, com.unity. It's a museum website, com with two M's, com.unity, and you can upload photos and texts about your community. And that will go into a database, which then this wall feeds on this database on the website, and you're part of the museum. You're presented in the museum on an everyday basis.
I guess that was going to be my next question, because I saw that you have a special app that creates a new narrative for each visitor to kind of enhance and personalize their visit. Is that what you just described?
No, that's another app we have. We have several very cool apps, and one of them is the website Community. That's not an app. That's the website I just described. But we also have an app where if you have a family tree on genie.com, you can actually, through the web, on your mobile phone with no app required, you can log in and see if there are people you are related to in the museum, both people, exhibits about people at the museum, and actual visitors visiting the museum while you are there. And last but not least, that's actually my favorite floor. You go down to the first floor, which is called the foundation floor. And in that floor, we have those things that are many times the most ancient, historically speaking, and also abstract, but also that are common, that we think are common to many, many different Jewish persons around the world. So we have, for example, Shabbat, the holidays, the idea of the covenant. We have work of art about the rites of passage in Jewish life, the bar and bat mitzvah, the kaddish, just as two examples. And also in the foundation's floor, we also talk about half of the gallery, and we talk about the influence of Jewish civilization on the world, specifically through the Bible. The Hebrew Bible is the most influential Jewish text in the sense that it's the most influential in other cultures and civilizations.
I've also seen that visitors can create art or cook with prominent chefs. Can you describe this, please?
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking about food. Okay, so on our third floor, we have an interactive display about food where you can choose a classic Jewish dish from one of the many communities that are part of the Jewish people. And you can watch a movie with a chef explaining what this dish is, where it came from. But most importantly, you can cook it yourself. Unfortunately, you don't actually get the dish at the end. I'm sorry. I lobby for getting the food at the end. I don't know why they wouldn't do it. But I'm certainly hopeful that one day the technology will be there and you could actually cook at the museum. That's what I'm striving for.
Where does the topic, I guess, of the conversos, the anusim, the crypto Jews, including Jews in Muslim countries who are forced to convert, where do you deal with that issue?
We actually have a lot of that at the museum, at the display center I talked about earlier of Sepharad. So in it, we have exhibits from before the expulsion and inquisition and conversos, etc., like the seal of the Jewish community of the city of Seville in Spain. But we also have a lot about the crypto Jews in the 15th and 16th century. We have a model of a synagogue that is currently a church, where a conversion happened in the 15th century. But my favorite display is actually an animated movie that we commissioned for the museum. I truly hope that, when your listeners, come to Israel as fast as possible in these times. I hope they come to the museum, and I really do recommend them watching this movie. It's a short animated movie about a Shabbat dinner in a converso family, in a crypto-Jewish family, and it has Ladino music played throughout the film. It's an absolute beautiful film. We also have exhibits from the village of Belmonte in Portugal, where a Jewish or a crypto-Jewish community lived for hundreds of years, believing they were the last Jews on earth. And we have more exhibits throughout about, you know, this amazing Jewish community and phenomenon.
What about these communities that have been surfacing very, very recently in the last few years, for example, in the American Southwest, that were originally crypto-Jewish communities and that are going back to Judaism, or at least investigating their Jewish history? Do you have any relationship with them?
Well, you know, many times these people reach out to us with specific questions and thoughts in our art and things we might have in our archives. And of course, we do what we can to help and facilitate with whatever they need. And, you know, that's part of the amazing thing in the Jewish people. You keep seeing this sort of renewal in new communities and people, whether they're individuals or families or entire communities, again, you know, being curious about their Jewish origins and past. And we're very fortunate that, you know, sometimes they reach out to us, and if we can help them, we're even more fortunate.
Tell us about some of your special events.
So, of course, unfortunately, you know, in the past year, it's actually been more than a year, we haven't really had any special events because of COVID. But in regular times, we're very happy to have here a lot of different events, and we hope that we can really get back to having a lot of events here soon. So, for example, we have a wonderful academic series about film every year. We have, because we have a wonderful archive of the still pictures and movies and music, and on that archive, we have series about communities. So it can be Moroccan communities, the community of Jewish Sephard, it can be Yiddish, it can be whatever. Each year we do at least two of them, and another series about Israeli film, new Israeli film that we show here at the museum. Aside from that, you know, we had an event about Jewish food, which I appreciated personally, and also events about, for example, about former Soviet Union Jews who made Aliyah to Israel and their families, and now their sons and daughters are trying, you know, to think about their identity and where they are in the Jewish space, in the Israeli space, in the Russian space. So we had a cultural event talking about that with speakers, with shows. We had a wonderful event about American Jews, where we had Nicole Krauss speaking with Eshkol Nivo. Nicole Krauss is a prominent Jewish American writer. Eshkol Nivo is a Jewish Israeli writer. And those are the sort of events we try and have here as much as we can, and we hope to get back to having as soon as we can.
I think it was very brave of you to open a couple of months ago. How have you adapted to the pandemic?
You know, the short and honest answer is we just do what we can to have, you know, to give people the best experience they can get under these conditions. So, for example, when we opened the museum, and we truly had no idea, you know, what was going to happen, the museum was already ready. Weeks before, and we couldn't open because of the pandemic. So, for example, we created a specific docent position, a specific guide position, which didn't exist before. It's called Ask Me Guides. So because we knew we couldn't lead groups like we're used to, people would come alone or in pairs or in families in capsules, then we trained guides so they could be in the gallery all the time, just so they can answer questions and see if someone, you know, needs some help, needs a specific question answered, wants some information about an exhibit, or wants to find themselves at the museum. So we train guides for that. And, you know, we just try and address these issues as best as we can. I'm not going to say it's easy. I'm just hoping that we can return to normal as soon as we can.
So I guess most of your visitors have been Israelis. And I was wondering if our listeners can visit the museum online.
So actually they can. Yes, most of our visitors have been Israeli, but we are offering online tours. And we very much hope that that the listeners will take them. You can find whatever we're offering on our website. But of course, I highly, highly, highly recommend that whenever we can, whenever your listeners can, come to Israel, enjoy the sun, enjoy the beach. I know what people come to Israel for. And after you've enjoyed the sun and the beach, it's not a long ride from the beach to come to the Anu, the Museum of the Jewish People, and walk around the museum and see the exhibits and ask our guides and have a talk and hopefully find yourself here.
I know it may be very soon, but have you had any feedback yet?
About the museum?
Yeah, from people who've seen it, either online or in person.
Yeah, so we've already been open for 2 months, and thankfully, the overwhelming feedback is extremely positive. People are very happy, they're very excited to have a museum of this caliber, of this innovativeness and ingenuity, open to talk about the Jewish people. So the overwhelming majority is extremely positive, and we're just so happy to have it, this feedback.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So happy to be here and looking forward to having you here at the museum.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.